If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
Eric Zorn joins us now. He is the publisher of something called the Picayune Sentinel. Eric, are you and Johanna two different TV people, or do you sit and watch the show together?
No, she has her own shows that she watches, and then we have watch shows together. I don't really watch shows on my own. It feels wrong to me. But she has her own set of shows that she watches. She watches the British Baking Show and Bake Off, whatever it's called.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And she's got her own shows. You're talking about reading. I read just about everything. We have the subtitles on for almost everything we watch, even the English language stuff. It's just easier.
Oh, 100%. And you get so used to it, you don't even notice the distraction that it would have appeared to be at first blush. But so do you then not watch any television at all, you're saying?
By myself, I don't watch TV. I watch sports on TV by myself, but I don't watch like dramas or series by myself, no.
Brendan and I, well, that's one of the things we do watch together. We'll watch the Bears or DePaul or Butler or, you know, if there's a sporting event, and we're pretty particular about that, it's my college basketball and the Bears, maybe the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll watch the Sunday football games. But otherwise...
Johanna, we couldn't watch the Bears last night. Johanna got up from the couch. She said, I'm going to bed. This is awful.
Yeah. Well, she made the right choice now, didn't she, Eric?
I watched till the bitter end. I always do.
Yeah, I did too. Or at least I watched as much of it as I usually do. I can't do anything for 3 hours. I can't sit and do anything for 3 hours. Every news break here, I take a stroll. It'll get antsy. Let's talk about some of the things that you have been writing about in the Picayune Sentinel. Our friend Austin Berg made a statement about the city budget, and then he has a lot of the things that are going to go up and some of the things that won't. What do you make in general of Mayor Johnson's ushering a increase in revenue through the city council?
Well, it strikes me that a lot of these little increases that he imposed, the increased bag tax, just for instance, and the speed cameras that he's imposing, are not progressive. I mean, he styles himself as a progressive mayor, and of course that means that you would ask more from wealthy people than you do from less wealthy people. And all of these taxes and fees and so on that he's tacking on are in that sense regressive. They're not indexed to income or anything like that, which is, you know, income tax is, and to some extent, property taxes are. If you have a more expensive house, you pay more in property taxes. So it seems like a fail there. It also strikes me as a sort of a one-time revenue boost that they're going to get. And I saw Joe Ferguson, the former inspector general of the city, say that he felt that this was just a cheap fix, and we're going to have a worse problem now because of that a year from now. So it was not well handled.
I want somebody to say what's a mayor supposed to do? You need a few hundred million dollars. Where do you get it? Property taxes seem to be equally spread across the city, and people with more expensive houses will pay more money than people if the county and city are doing their job. What do you want them to do?
Well, I think that the $68 million property tax increase, which was indexed to inflation, that he finally settled on before he capitulated and had no property tax, was a reasonable ask. $300 million was a lot. He cut it in half, and he cut it back to $68 million. And that seemed like a reasonable increase, not unduly burdensome. But it would go against his campaign promise not to raise property taxes.
I'm just asking you, so where is he going to get – where should a reasonable person find the money then?
Well, he's got to find it through budget cuts. He's got to find programs that, you know, the budget is if you talk to Austin or if you've read Austin lately, Austin will point out that the city budget is massively greater now than it was 5 years ago, much more than inflation would dictate. And one of the reasons for that was that we had a bunch of programs that came in using COVID relief money. And now we have to do something about that. Maybe we have to cut those. I mean, cutting programs, it's not necessarily popular, but it's got to be the thing you have to do. If you mix program cuts and staffing cuts, and he cut 10 people out of his own office, which I was surprised that he had enough people in his office to cut 10 people.
How did he get 10 people? Yeah, go ahead.
Much more than that, I'm sure. So I think you have to mix program cuts with with property tax increases, and he's looking for other sources. I think some of the ideas that he had were good, but you've got to get state law to change in some cases.
Could he have taxed the booze? He wanted to increase the tax on liquor, on alcohol.
He did, and he wanted it to go up to like 34% or something like that, it was a significant increase. And again, the hospitality industry really balked at that. It seems like if you had come in with a lower ask on that it would have been struck as a more reasonable tone. But once you set out an increase that's that great, you end up setting people's teeth on edge, and you have a really hard time negotiating. He talks a lot about what a great collaborator he is. What was really striking to me was the speeches that were given yesterday at City Council by some of his staunchest allies. We're talking about what a botch he had made of all the negotiating processes, how he had alienated so many people, and continues not to do his job very well. And this was, one of my complaints about him when he was running for mayor, which was he had all these grand ideas. A lot of them were based on the idea that Springfield was going to go along with his tax increases that he was proposing. And the question always came up, well, what's your plan B when Springfield says, no, we're not going to vote to let you increase these taxes? And he would always refuse to answer that and just say, we're going to invest in people. He falls back on these mantras about his how wonderful he is, what a collaborator he is, and so on. But it didn't happen. And so he didn't have a plan B. And that's why I was very, very nervous about him coming in, that I thought that he was not a realistic person when it comes to city budgeting.
Evidently. Austin writes, the budget does include some of these things, and you alluded to them, but an amusement tax hike on live events and streaming services and Netflix from 9 to 10.25%. So I'm going to pay the city 10.25%. So if Netflix is costing me $10, I'm going to give the city $1.25. And a lot of people are paying more than 10 bucks for Netflix, but if I'm reading that correctly, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I guess I need to look closer at my bill. What is it, their business, what I'm watching? Personal property lease tax goes from 9 to 11%. Parking garage tax will now be almost 24% on weekdays, and 20% of what you pay will be added on as a tax on weekends. And the plastic bags at the grocery store, 7 cents per bag, it's now going to cost you a dime.
Right. And also that 9 cents of that is going to go to the city, and 1 cent goes to the retailer, to the merchant. Previously, with a 7 cent tax, it was 5 cents for the city and 2 cents for the merchant. The merchants are not happy about that either. I know you have two different residences. You could actually make sure that your Netflix account and those things are in your suburban residence, not your city residence.
Oh, there's an idea.
You can save a couple bucks. I don't know what it is out where you live, but it might be that it's cheaper to do that. Those of us who are living in the city are going to have to pay it. But in some ways that's, obviously, the city has no role in your commerce with Netflix. They don't provide any service that Netflix requires.
Exactly.
But they have to find the money somewhere, and taxing amusements, taxing things that are not requirements. One of the things that I think they did abandon was increasing the garbage collection fee, which. I understand that because it is regressive. I think it's like 10 bucks a month basically right now for garbage collection in the city, and they were going to raise it to something like 15, something like that. And they nixed that. But one of the things that our friend Austin is really good at, and I really admire him for this, is he will look around the country at other big cities and sort of look for best practices and look for standard rates and think, where are we outliers? Where is Chicago an outlier? And I think when it came to garbage collection taxes, ours is relatively low, for instance, so that if you could bring some of these fees up to, sort of standard, what other big cities do, people would feel a lot better.
I'm kind of old school about that sort of thing. It seems to me like tax, smokes, and alcohol. People are addicted to both or enjoy each enough that if it goes up a lot, they're already paying a lot for alcohol. And cigarettes aren't inexpensive. And if they're more expensive, they'll still use them. Or they'll use it less, and everybody benefits from that. Mincing Rascal Panelists, that's the podcast that I host and we post here at WGN Radio every Wednesday. Eric Zorn, longtime Tribune columnist and now the publisher of a free newsletter you can get called the Picayune Sentinel, is on a line with us. So in the run-up to the last election, the Des Moines Register ran a poll from a pollster, Ann Selzer. It made some news because she said, what do you know, he's going to do well, he might win Iowa. Obviously, they were wrong about that and the election overall. Donald Trump is now suing the paper and Ann Selzer's polling firm for what he says is election interfering fiction. I guess it's just going to be this way for the second term, too. These old grievances that don't matter anymore. He won the election. She was wrong. But he's not going to let it go, is he, Eric?
He's not. Obviously, this is a completely frivolous suit. I don't think that Selzer conducted the poll in bad faith. She just had a bad sample. And we've seen bad polls before. We'll see them again. And there's certainly nothing illegal or civilly libelous about it. And he did win the election, so he's not going to be able to prove any damages. So I don't quite understand. Well, I do understand where he's going. These are just shots across the bow of the media.
Of the media in general.
Yeah, and the media in general, like, don't criticize Trump because he'll go after you for any little thing that he can. And, of course, we just saw on Saturday ABC News settled this lawsuit that had been brought by Trump against them. Because Trump had they paid him like $15 or $16 million because on the air George Stephanopoulos had said that Trump had raped the writer E. Jean Carroll, and he, in fact, legally the jury found that he didn't rape her, he just sexually assaulted her in a way that maybe we don't want to describe on the radio, but it was not technically rape. And ABC paid millions of dollars to settle this case with Trump rather than let it go to depositions and let it go to trial, even though most people who I've read or talked to about this said that it was a pretty easy case for ABC to win, that the judge himself in the trial had said that, informally, yes, rape is the right word, but it's not technically the right word. And to prove, ever since 1964's Sullivan versus New York Times ruling, there's a very high standard for defaming a public figure. You have to prove that the statement was knowingly false, that George Stephanopoulos was knowingly false and acted with a reckless disregard of the truth. That's not the same standard as somebody sues a private citizen. It's just that it's false is defamatory on its face. But when the public figure, and there's no more public figure than Donald Trump, the standard is really high. There's no way, I don't think, and I'm not a lawyer, but everyone who I've talked about this says that there's no way that ABC would have lost. So why did they wave the white flag? Why did they kiss his behind? Why did they embrace his ankles on this?
Stephanopoulos said that Trump had been found liable for rape and defamed the victim of that rape, and sexual assault would have diffused this, Eric?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think Trump for a moment wanted to sit for depositions next week. He was supposed to. They were scheduled to. First of all, he's a compulsive liar, and the idea that he might lie under oath is always present.
No, but my point is that if they had said sexual assault rather than rape, is rape the word that is causing the president to feel like
yes.
He was defamed?
Yes, exactly. But I don't think that he wants to get into, he wanted to get into a long public discussion about the fine distinction between the kind of sexual assault that the jury found that he committed and actual rape. I mean, there is a legal distinction, but, it's not like he said he had raped somebody and he'd never touched them or never seen them before or something like that. So.
Yeah.
It would have been a really ugly trial for Trump, and ABC had to know that. And their surrender just looks like, we are bending the knee to the new president. And it's the same thing we're seeing right now with all these tech tycoons who are like Jeff Bezos of Amazon and Mark Zuckerberg of
Facebook. Self-preservation, isn't it? All right.
All this money to the inauguration. It's just really shameful.
We'll talk more about this on the Mincing Rascals podcast and about your idea about college football. You think college conferences and divisions are meaningless anymore. Look at the Big Ten. It's a national coast-to-coast conference with way more than 10 teams. You think the championships for college football should just be take the top 16 or so teams and just have a bracket, right?
Exactly.
12-team tournament?
But as long as they're seeded by the way they end the season, right? I mean, Boise State is a 3 seed in this upcoming tournament because they won whatever conference they're in, and they're actually just the 8th-best team in the country, and that's dumb.
Says Eric Zorn. We'll talk tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Thank you, Mr. Z.
Look forward to it, John. Thank you.